Hello and welcome to my podcast, which is Off the Rails with me, Claire. And today I have a really cool guest who will be speaking about financial well-being, Jess Kieran. I will hand over to you in a minute and we can start talking all things financial well-being and give me a little bit more insights into that. So you are listening to episode 22. My last one for this year, 2024, hitting off in 2025, which I think is a really nice seamless link into what we're going to be talking about to set you up in a really, really good way for the up and coming year. And yeah, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please like and subscribe. And here I will now introduce my guest. So Jess Kieran, welcome to my podcast. I hope you're good today.
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
No problem at all. So yeah, we were speaking just a little bit before we hit record on all things like that led you and me as well to what we're doing today. And just for context for everyone that's listening, we actually virtually met through a really cool somebody I think we both obviously look up to, which is Steph, part of or the founder of Fuck Being Humble. I'm probably going to get loads of bleeps now that I've sworn already within the first couple of minutes. But yeah, we were on a webinar together, unbeknownst to ourselves, obviously. And one of the amazing takeaways was, you know, about using your platform, kind of linking with people and making sure that you have a great network. So hence why we're here today. Just Kieran, you reached out to me last week and we kind of, yeah, just quickly got together and here we are. So, yeah, tell me a little bit about what it is you do. So it's financial well-being. Unpack that a little bit for me. Tell me about you and how you got to that.
Yeah, I'm happy we could fail fast together and be here so quickly. And thanks for having me as your last guest of the year. I didn't realize it would be your last one. Yes. But yeah, so I do basically holistic financial well-being. My background is in banking. So I worked for NatWest Group for 4 years. I was a financial risk manager, I guess technically still am. And then I moved into the innovation space. So starting to really look at like emerging technology and how that can help us better serve customers through more innovative products, but also, you know, protect the bank obviously as a second line of defense. And then from that, I kind of moved into the social impact space where I did a fellowship called Year Here, which focuses on complex social issues here in London. So I moved back to London from Edinburgh and I worked on my primary focus during that time was on financial resilience and life shocks. So I worked for a poverty charity called Turn to Us and I was running innovation there. And then I kind of worked on kind of, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, the role of anchor organizations and how they support communities in London. And then I founded a fintech called Carla. And essentially I was building a financial search engine and digital financial coach. And the idea was to take people from inaction to action with their finances and really look at how do you point people to relevant financial products and services that help them meet their life goals. And really looking at money in this lens through this lens of rather than money being a goal, money is a resource that helps you reach your goals, but really helping people understand that and getting the correct education through action with their finances. And, you know, at the time, there were a lot of things out there in terms of financial literacy and like getting people to understand finances. But the more I worked in this space and the more, you know, users and customers that I, you know, worked with to understand their behaviors is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And the reason behind that is much deeper than just not having the knowledge. Like not having knowledge is a big part of it, but the deeper thing is, you know, our relationship to money is set by age 7. And so that comes before knowledge and education. That comes from how you're raised. That comes from how your family viewed money. What did you kind of soak up? What cultures of money existed around you? What, you know, religion were you a part of? What what's your, you know, ethnic background and heritage? Do you have an immigrant background? Like a lot of things make up how we relate to money the same way we relate to anything else, whether it's relationships, whether it's food, whether it's, you know, fitness, all of those things come from something deeper. So on that journey, I was kind of getting more and more interested in the behavioral science behind like how we think about and talk about money and, you know, don't talk about money actually, which is usually the case. You know, 62-63% of people don't talk about money due to fear of shame, fear of judgment, shame, and guilt. And these are kind of the top factors as to why we don't do it. So I closed down my startup at the end of last year. I completed my trauma of money certification around the same time. And that really looks at, that's a great program. It's run out of Vancouver by the amazing founder, Chantel Chapman. And they really look at the idea of decreasing shame and increasing discernment. And I qualified as a professional trauma of money practitioner. And then I've brought that into what is now finance therapy. And that's what I run. And so I really look at money and mental health. And that's due to a combination of, you know, my own experience of burnout and poor mental health, you know, being a founder and working in the startup ecosystem. I had two jobs at the same time. And, you know, all those things are also driven by my own relationship with money. But, you know, our mental health and our money, it's so deeply linked, and they can affect each other greatly. So that's why I founded Finance Therapy. And I basically, I do, you know, writing around money and mental health, but I also lead workshops. I do employee well-being. And then I also do founder financial resilience and well-being. So really trying to support people who, you know, have side hustles or businesses or want to be entrepreneurs or are entrepreneurs in understanding their relationship with money and how that's impacting their ability to build and grow a business.
Wow. Okay. You have told me so much that maybe I realized but didn't tap into. So I'm going to kind of try and remember a couple of things that you've just said. So the first thing that kind of was a bit, I was able to relate to straight away was culturally and how money affects you. And if you come from a family of maybe first or second generation immigrants. So my family are Irish and moved to England. That's where I was brought up. And there was always, a very strong kind of belief in our house where you work very hard and you work for your money. We didn't get pocket money. It wasn't a thing. My friends got pocket money. We didn't. We did chores around the house and we got treats, of course. But yeah, it was just different. It wasn't what we had. And when we were always encouraged to get a job as soon as we could. Our education was important, but we were always, okay, well, if you want something, you go out and work for it. So those in our household, we just thought that was the norm. And of course, in a lot as well of other households, regardless of culture, it is the norm. You are brought up with a certain amount of kind of empowerment to go out and get, you know, make your own money. However, it wasn't everybody's norm. So what happens inside a certain home with a certain culture that, you know, is instilled in you, until you start talking about these things in a bigger audience or from a more holistic manner, you don't realize that it is different case by case, and how you are brought up does instill different values with regards to money. So, that was just something that I thought, because throughout my life, I have realized that how I was brought up has made me different. I've always been careful with money. And that was, one, culturally, but also my parents were self-employed. So from 1 month to the next, there was always a sense of be careful with your money. You don't know what's going to happen. And that is still in me today, even when I've been in a secure corporate job. Now it's different again because I'm self-employed, so I do have that. But when I was in a secure corporate job, I was always, I'm not going to spend my whole salary, which I would work with other people and they lived from paycheck to paycheck, even though they earned big salaries. I was like, how do you get through that sort of money? And it was just frivolously spend. Whereas my mindset was, just in case I'm going to save, or I'm going to save for something bigger and better and more long-term, because that's how I was brought up. And in the moment when you're younger, you don't realize those lessons that are being paved for you. But when you've mentioned that, it's really kind of, I know how that feels. So tell me a little bit more about that. How and why is that part of it so important for you? Because it's clearly spoke to me quite loudly. Just a quick, you went through so many facts and so many interesting points, and that was just one that I was like, I sometimes have just kind of paved over that, but there is a hell of a lot through how I was brought up that really did instill how I look at money and finances today.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to trigger you.
No, in a good way. No, in a very positive way, because I believe that I appreciate money. Mm-hmm. And some people will even be like, oh no, we'll go out every, I don't know, even small things like, I'll go out to eat a couple of times a week. And don't get me wrong, I love going out to eat, but for me, I still like it to feel like a treat because yeah. that's how I was brought up. Because my parents, we by no means didn't have, you know, we lived a comfortable life, but everything was done with, you know, a certain approach of, you know, you have to be grateful for things, you know, that kind of way. So even that for me is like, I like to approach it in a different way. So yeah, not in a bad way. It was very comforting for me actually, because it's a nice message that, you know, your childhood carries through. And some instances maybe that you have examples of, you know, where that hasn't been as comfortable for people. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things that you said there, and thank you so much for sharing. Threw myself off there, catching myself in a butt.
Don't worry.
The idea of our childhood having so much of an impact is really scary, and I think like anybody who has gone to therapy or has tried to work through a lot of, you know, difficult times and really trying to understand themselves will know that actually like everything we do is linked to our childhood in some way, and depending on what that childhood was like we either suppress certain things and they will show up regardless, unconsciously, or you know, when you start working through that and you start becoming aware of certain behaviors and habits and things that you have and where they come from, that can be very triggering and that can be quite difficult. Like you said, like, you know, people who earn high salaries, you know, I know plenty of people who earn 100K and spend 100K, and they're actually worse off, even though their life looks shinier and, you know, better on Instagram. They're worse off than, you know, friends I have who earn, you know, 30, 35K and only spend 15K a year, because those people are, you know, building for a future and yeah. they are saving for the rainy day, maybe because they have to. It could be out of necessity, but it's not to say that, you know, our relationship to money is set by age 7 and therefore it's terrible because our parents gave us all these like horrible habits, because, you know, frugality can be great and is great if it is serving a different purpose. And in adulthood, what we have to do is learn to, you know, give thanks to what serves us or no longer serves us and let it go, and be able to take the great things forward with us and say, well, how do I get from here to there, like to the next stage? What's going to serve me for that? And that is a lot of deep work in terms of understanding what do I want from life. And this is why when I talk a lot about money, is one, we have to talk about it, and we don't like talking about it, but if we don't talk about it, we're not going to realize what we actually want from it, why we need it, what purpose it's going to serve. And two, we find it more difficult to, you can't get rid of the shame if you don't bring it out of the shadows. And like, shame thrives from you not talking about something, whether it's money, whether it's sex, whether it's relationships, whether it's food, whatever it is that you're having a difficult relationship with, the less you bring it out into the open, who's going to be able to help you, right? Like, you can't ask for help if you don't know how to vocalize that. So a lot of the work I do is based on just that first step, you know, like getting comfortable talking about money in the first place, and then learning how to ask for what you need, whether that's help, whether that's advice, whether that's guidance, whether it's, you know, you said you went from corporate to being self-employed, and that's a really big step. And, you know, you could have put 50K in your bank account and said, cool, I can afford to live on that money for the next 2 years and I'll be fine. And I'm going to give myself 2 years for this business to work. It's still stressful. It still puts us into a state of scarcity, because what will happen to a lot of people is they'll say, I've got 2 years. And instead of focusing on the time you have now to get what you get done, you start thinking, I've only got 2 years, like, fuck. And so the scarcity mindset slips in. And so instead of spending all that time doing deep work on your business, caring about what you care about, like doing the work around that, building the communities, you spend a lot of time in survival mode, or like, you can slip into survival mode, which means that you procrastinate, you become less efficient, you don't use that time wisely, you then beat yourself up for not using the time wisely, and then you bring guilt into the equation. And that's why, it becomes this cycle that it's really hard to escape without support, but it's also really hard to do what you wanted to do. And then what happens when you get to the end of the 2 years and you didn't achieve everything that you set out to achieve? You feel like a failure, and then that then seeps in. And this is why the mental health and the money piece is so intrinsically linked, because
it is, and it's not something, it's not two words that you would naturally put together, but it is so relevant, because none of us can survive without money, whether it's a penny or a pound. It's, we all need money to survive. And I think what's really kind of, again, sort of very relative to, and I can kind of really kind of home in on it, and I think more and more people going through it, is this: people are transitioning from corporate to trying to start up on their own. And I think all of those things that you said, quite quickly going into survival mode, leaving something where they felt quite trapped but secure financially. So there's those two things you often battle with, but then you come into kind of this free state of mind with a business. However, then the problem that you had before was the corporate and not the money. And then it flips on its head and it's okay. I love the fact that I can do what I've always wanted to do, but the financial side of things really scares me. And there's been so many people that I work with, because they do want to transition out of what they want to do, but the financial thing constantly holds them back. So when you deal with your clients and even advising from a different angle, what are those things that people should kind of look out for? You know, I know you've mentioned briefly that 2-year kind of pot of money is something that is a nice to have, but there's a lot of people that just can't get to that. What would you kind of advise on that? What would be your angle?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 2 years is ridiculous, right? Unless you're going to do what I did and move back in with your parents. And I'm grateful that I can do that. And I'm from London, so it doesn't actually put me at like a huge disadvantage. It's not like, yeah, I'm moving back to a village that, you know, it costs £200 to take a train into London or anything like that, which some people, that is the reality, but luckily we can do so much virtually now. I think like the ideal scenario is, if you want to transition out of corporate, is to, one, always have your emergency fund, and you should have that anyway. Like if you're working in corporate, that is what you should be working towards, and that's the first thing you should build, because, you know, emergencies can be anything. It could be your washing machine breaking down, it could be your rent going up with very little notice, it could be you needing to move closer to family because somebody is sick, it could be you needing to pay for somebody's care. You know, like our parents are getting older, you never know what's going to happen, and nothing is a given. And so when we talk about emergency funds, it is very emotional, because it means talking about morality, and it's about talking about change, which we hate. But you need to be prepared for that change financially, because there is nothing worse than dealing with a very serious illness in your family or for yourself and not financially being able to support yourself through that. There's nothing worse than something that's like going to cause grief in your life, whether it's the loss of a job, you know, redundancy, the loss of a pet, a person, a parent, a child, and then worrying that you have to go straight back to work because you can't afford not to. And so an emergency fund, I say, is always the first thing, and looking at that realistically and saying, do I have 3 to 6 months of living expenses in a high yield savings account somewhere that it's earning money, so it's not being wasted, or it's in like a, you know, low to medium risk stocks and shares account or ISA, just somewhere that you would be willing to take that money out if you needed it on the spot, like that. Yeah. And it's accessible, but it's still earning money. It's not just sitting in an account somewhere doing nothing. And then if you want to leave your job and have a business, you need another fund, which I lovingly call, and many people do, is the fuck it fund. And that's the I hate my boss and I can't stand them anymore and I have to quit today. And I'm going to negotiate the lowest possible leave period. I don't care what it says in my contract. I can't be here anymore.
Yeah.
It's the, I've had this dream and I've been working on it, you know, every Saturday for the last few years. And I actually want to turn this into like my everyday. And that's like 6 month buffer, you know, that's your 6 months of living expenses on top of your emergency fund. Because what you have to imagine this money is that it's your salary. And that's like your starter fund salary. And you know, that's whatever you feel comfortable giving yourself. If you think you can do it in 3 months because you've already been working on the idea, you have a community, you have some customers, that is, you know, up to the individual. If you think I'm actually 3 months to a salary in this, if I quit my job right now, cool, 3 months. If it's more like, I want to spend more time on this, I actually need to build up clients, I need to like get out there and network, but I can't do that because of the full-time job I have, give yourself at least 6 months. And that is the money that you imagine that you pay yourself with.
Right.
Kind of like, okay, maybe you don't pay yourself as much as your employer was paying you, but how much is my rent? How much are my bills? How much does it cost to go out and eat with my friends once a week? Because you still need to look after, that's part of your well-being, right? And so if it is seeing friends once a month or once a week, if it's you have a pet and you still need to buy their pet food, like what is your 6 months of living expenses plus a buffer for like any things that come up, gift buying, like going out and seeing people, going on a holiday, not going on a holiday for 6 months for some people is like changes their well-being a lot.
Yes.
Like, definitely, right? People think like, oh my God, she's always traveling. And I'm like, well, when I'm not, I'm miserable. And so for me, it's really difficult to not go away more than like at least once a year.
Yeah, you have to understand your non-negotiables and I think be realistic about it. And I think that's often where people make some of these early mistakes is I can do without that and I can do without that. But then what you're giving up, what does that really affect? And that is a really, really, really good piece of advice to give anybody because you may think I can strip everything, my luxuries, but I think there's tiers of luxuries. Mm-hmm. There's luxuries that are nice to have, enjoyable and need to have.
Yeah.
Because luxury can be going out for that cup of coffee once a week.
Yeah.
It's something that you're investing in yourself and it may be the weekend away every 3 months or whatever it is because you need that. You need sun. You need to be away. You need that time to reflect, whatever it is. But it's that non-negotiable that I think, yeah, that's something super important that people really need to be honest with themselves about.
Yeah.
What can I give up and what can't I give up? Yeah.
And that's exactly it. Like being honest with yourself is so difficult because we love to believe that we're better than who we are.
Yeah. I'm a mistake. Yeah.
And it's like, I can't remember the word now because my brain is doing that thing. But there is a thing like, you know, you're overconfident. And this is actually a thing with like behavioral science when it comes to money. There is overconfidence. I know more than I actually know, so I'm going to invest in these stocks. Or I know more than these people, so I'm going to do this. But we're also overconfident in who we are. And so holding a mirror up to ourselves and saying, actually, like, what do I really need? It's really hard because we don't look after ourselves like that. And many people who are spending all their money, frivolously, I think is the word you used, it's usually to cover something else up.
Yes.
And when you move into a space where you are relying on yourself financially, you no longer have a big employer who looks after your pension and your national insurance and your everything that you need and you never thought about, and you become completely self-reliant, all of those things start to become more in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're looking after your well-being is so important because, and like your mental health, because you really start to realize what you needed for your mental health before and what were you using as like a mask or as a plaster when you're in corporate. It's not going to go away just because you left that job. And I think we all think that, right? Oh, if I leave this
I think job, that's a, yeah, that is a really good point because the core of who you are is carries you through regardless of where you kind of put yourself, and the same not always the same problems, I'm probably not articulating that very well, but the same core things that might trigger you, problems, stress, anxiety, just because you're working for yourself, you'll still have to deal with those at some point when you scale, when things don't turn out. So yeah, it's a really good point to make that it comes with you. Don't just because you've changed from corporate to working for yourself, you just don't leave all of that behind.
Show up more reality. Like you just get rid of the other person that you were blaming for your problem. Yeah. Like if I'm very frank about it. And so yes, changing your environment is extremely important. If you live in a toxic household, if you work for a toxic company or like that word toxic gets thrown around, but you know, really like if you're working in a workplace where they don't respect your boundaries, if they, you know, are calling you at the weekends, if they are picking at things that really don't matter, but you're actually working really hard and you're meeting all of your goals. If you're asking to be paid what you're worth and they're saying no, that's going to build resentment, and that that's toxic for you because they hold the power. And so, yes, leaving those environments is very important, and it is going to do a world of good for your well-being, but it is not the solution to your problems, in that if you leave, you're not going to be like, I'm fixed, I'm great, I'm going to figure this out. And like, and that is why having that buffer of your fuck it fund on top of your emergency fund is going to be great, because it gives you time and space, but then you still have to do the work in how you use that time and space. You still have to say, I'm not going to slip into scarcity where I'm like, oh shit, I've got 6 months to find a job, or I've got 6 months to make this business work. Yes, it's going to light a fire under your butt, and you're going to be like, I've got 6 months and I'm going to make this work. But you have to use that time in that mindset. Like, I'm going to do this. I believe I'm going to do this, rather than the other thing that many of us do, especially women, where it's like, actually, like, have I got what it takes to do this? Of course, you're going to question yourself. It's going to happen, but you can't let that take over. You can't sit there and say, what have I done? Like, why did I ever make this decision? Like, it's never going to work out for me. Like, and then this is where the idea of limiting beliefs come in. Because if you leave with all of the fire in your belly and you're like, I'm going to do this, and then you let all of these thoughts creep in around, I'm not good enough to do this, and nobody's going to want to buy my services, and nobody wants this from me. If you know that you can potentially be like that, and if you've been like that in your job, don't quit your job until you have some sort of validation for the thing that you're trying to do. So if you are, I don't know, selling crochet clothes, crochet clothes at the weekend and try and sell them. And when enough people have bought them and shown you that actually, like, people want this and it sells and it works and it doesn't just sit on Depop or Vinted or, you know, any of these apps, and doesn't get any likes and doesn't get any purchases, then you haven't proven that it's worth quitting your job for.
Yeah.
So, and the same, if you're a coach, like, start finding clients before you leave. It's
a really good piece of advice. Yeah, you've got to understand, can something work before you basically take a huge risk? And then, like you say, all the other things that come around that, then the self-doubt about not only what you're trying to do, but then about yourself. It's all so relative. So yeah, taking steps, smaller steps towards what you want before you risk everything. And I think that is a true bit of advice. You will get people that be like, yeah, leave it, it's no good for you, it's toxic. That word toxic we've spoken about. Leave it, do something for yourself, you're totally right, yeah, go for it. It's not as easy as that. If it was, we'd all be working for ourselves, and the life would be all great and rainbows and the rest of it. But the reality is, life isn't easy. Life isn't like that. We can make it easier by seeking out people like yourself that can support and guide and help us understand the why and the how. So, like you've mentioned, a lot of things are instilled with us through childhood, through our surroundings, through parents or guardians that we've been brought up with. Then it's social, you know, the people you surround yourself with, you know. And there's a lot of this, which I think is something that people deal with today a lot, and especially a younger generation, is, you know, social media is good and it's bad and it's ugly, because yes, I run my business through social media and all the platforms, so I'm grateful for it. However, there is a different generation, and regardless of generation, that look at things and think, oh, people overnight can earn millions on Instagram, and you told all this crap, basically, that become a millionaire and I'll show you how to get X amount of hits. So there's that part of it. And there's also, you know, so two things here I want to pull out. One is kind of this false living on Instagram that happens. And also social influences, you know, people that maybe you're constantly trying to keep up with. Okay, well, in that circle of people, they have a certain amount of designer bags, they go out to certain places, and they've constantly got, you know, in certain restaurants and having, you know, this life that feels great. How do you deal with, or what advice could you give to people that feel kind of socially, the weight of social environments that they need to keep up, but they don't have the finances to do that? Again, it's something that I think is relative to mental health. How do you get that a lot? Because I feel like it's something that is again not spoken about, because people don't want they don't want the people they're around to think, oh, I can't be the same as you. I'm not a peer financially, but I'm trying to keep up and it's actually doing me no good. So yeah, that's a big way of asking you a question, but basically with the social pressures that we have today, how do we protect ourselves or those around us from not feeling like they have to sacrifice to keep up?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, and this is why I do so much work in terms of like values-based anything. Values-based earning, spending, saving, investing, because that's all about you as the individual. And I think, you know, at some extent it comes with getting older and wiser, because for sure we've all felt that pressure. We all kind of see it, you know, when I was younger, people wanted Louis Vuitton bags and Louis Vuitton shoes, and I mean, realistically, I'm really clumsy. And so do I want to be in a pair of 5.5-inch stilettos and carrying this bag that's got more shit than I need in it?
Yeah.
No, I'm really lazy. I hate carrying bags. Like, a backpack is all I'll carry. And so for me, like, that's always been my grounding in like, what do I value? Because I would be so pissed off if I spent £1,000 on a bag that I never took out of its case. Right. Yeah. Like, that's, and that also comes from my background and the scarcity background. It's like, everything you have, you need. Everything was out of need. And so if you find yourself in a space where, and this is easier said than done, but you find yourself in a space where you're with friends who are buying handbags and wanting to go out and eat at really expensive restaurants, and they want to do this a few times a month, and, or they want to go, this is what I hear a lot now, maybe because of the age group I'm in, but it's like the hen do's, right? Mm-hmm. The bachelor parties and the, you know, all my friends are getting married and each of them want to go away somewhere in Europe or US for like a week to celebrate their bachelorette or bachelor party or whatever. And then they're going to have a wedding, which you also have to attend. And then in a year or two, they're probably going to have a baby and then a baby shower. And then they're going to have this nonsense of like a gender reveal party. And then we're going to have a baby shower. And because these things, we see them on social media, we're starting to think they're normal. They're not normal. Okay. Like, normal is finding out the sex of your baby when it comes out. Normal is like texting a few friends and saying like, oh, we just found out the gender, like this is what we're having. And those are like all built in community. And so really, as the individual, being able to take a step back and saying, what do I value? What do I value from my friends? Why am I in these friendships? And you know, depending on the age you've got to, you start to realize who your friends are. And you'll know, like, when you're like 21 and you're done uni, you shed some of the school friends, and you get to your mid-20s and you shed some of the uni friends. And then you start to approach 30 and you start to shed the friends who, you know, depending on which path your life has gone into. And that happens naturally through like drifting apart because of values, but we do it unconsciously. And yeah. So really becoming more conscious about like who surrounds me, because you are the average of the 5 people around you. Like, this is a thing that goes around and people talk about, like, you are the average of the 5 people that are around you. And that doesn't mean that you become parts of them, but it's about what they say. It's yeah. about what they do, their actions, and how that feeds into you and your perception of life and how you feel about yourself and how you feel about them. So what I would say is, if you're in those situations and you think, I have to do this to fit in, but I don't want to, and you're feeling like unaligned with yourself and you're feeling, I don't know, sad or anxious about those things, it's really time to take a step back and say, actually, why am I friends with this person? Not to say go and break up with all your friends, but why do I spend so much time in their company? And what does that give me? And it's not, yeah. you have to become a bit selfish, because you say, how does that line up with what I want? And then this goes back to goal setting. So the easiest way you can do any of this is take a moment and sit down and think, a year from now, and, you know, using things like visualization or whatever, where do I want to be? Who do I want to be? How do I want to feel? And who around me is going to help me get there? And who around me is going to make me feel that way? And how am I going to make them feel how I want to make them feel? How do I want people to feel in my company? And so really starting to look at that, and it's, you know, some people think that's like more spiritual way of being, but it's not. Like, we're all humans. We have to connect. We have relationships for a reason. And if those relationships are putting you at a detriment financially, and you're trying to keep up with the Joneses,
yeah,
my question is always like, who the fuck are the Joneses anyway? Right? Like, why am I up with them? I don't know who they are. Like, it's not my, it doesn't align with me. So for me, it's really easy. I'm not going to buy a handbag because I'm never going to carry it. I'm not going to buy high heels after the pandemic because I'm just going to fall over and break my ankle. And then I'm not going to be able to walk anywhere anyway. Right? And so starting to look at little things like that and say, actually, why do I do this? And then giving yourself the grace to say, I did this to survive in that moment. And I'm okay with that. I'm at peace with who I was, but it's not how I'm going to go forward. And now I'm living for myself, like truly for myself. And whether that means putting up boundaries with friendships, putting up boundaries with family, some people, you know, once you achieve social mobility, this, I see this a lot, right? Like you earn more than your parents ever could have dreamed. And then you start feeling kind of at odds with the way you grew up and, and the people around you. And you go back at Christmas and you're like, I have nothing in common with anybody here anymore. And they don't, like, it's not the same. But actually, you're still humans. You came from the same place. You share a lot of values. You share a lot of memories. And it's not about the materialistic.
Yeah, you I was just about to say that you strip away the material things and look at who you really are. And it goes back to what you said of your values and what you value in life. And you realize when you're in a room and you're stripped of all those materialistic things, it's very clear what your values are then, if you really kind of are very honest with yourself. And I think that is a really nice, important message to take away is those things. And I wanted to kind of home in on that because there is so much now fakery around how people are living. And it just puts so much pressure on a lot of people and trying to kind of show up in a certain way. And I think when it comes to finances, it's super important to realize, you know, how you live and how, are you living the best way possible for you within your remit and not living above your means, because it's very easy. You hear so many people that get themselves into so much trouble because they're trying to live the same life as the guy next door, and it's live your own life, you know, and the pressure of that and how that makes you feel, and you know, in a household, the ripple effect that can have. You know, when you can't, you might have a designer bag beside you, but you can't pay your electricity bill, you know, something, and that happens. And there's so many people that have bad money management. And I think all of these things, if we just stop and collect our thoughts and really understand what brings us value, it will, you know, you'll go into something with much better intent, whether it's anything, you know. That's really nice takeaway. That's
the exact point. It's like, we actually don't know, because nobody talks about money.
Yeah,
you don't know the people that you follow online. Like, if we're realistic about this, right? Like, Instagram's been around for 10 years. I think I first downloaded Instagram in 2014.
Yeah,
I was late to the party, but we don't know the people we're following, right? These people who have like 100k followers or whatever it is, you don't personally know them, and less so do you know their financial situation. And you know, I've read a lot of studies on this, and like the things behind like the travel influencers, right? They get themselves into debt to be able to show you this life online, right? And there's a lot of talk around, like, you know, the Instagram is a highlights reel, but for some people it's like a curated highlights reel. These are, and you know, the laws around saying what's a gift or what's an ad are very recent, the last few years, right? And so we've lived most of the last decade looking at this life that other people have curated and put online without knowing what was given to them for free, without knowing how much they were paid to post that. And, you know, I've got friends who are quote unquote influencers. They get brand deals and they get paid like a shit ton of money to do a 10 second thing to get you to buy something from this organization. Okay. Do they use it? No, they don't use it. And I know people who have boxes and boxes and boxes. I'm looking to the side at like my nothing, but my non-boxes. I actually do have a box of my nail polishes here because I need some money. But I'm looking at their stuff, and it's like stuff that they're like, can I resell this? But they've had to open it and use it for a YouTube video.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, where can I give it? Who wants it? Like, how do I get rid of this? Because they're not using these products. Yeah. They're being paid thousands of pounds to tell you to use them and show you how they put it on, and then talk about how this is my favorite night cream that I use every day. And it's like, well, how do you use that every day? And that.
Yeah, exactly. Sure it is.
What are you talking about? Because if I'm going to pay 50 quid for a tub of cream, it better be lasting me more than a week.
Yeah.
Exactly. So how are you using the other one every night? And so it's really like starting to interrogate, like, what are you being fed and what do you believe? Because marketeers are using psychology against you. And that I use that language on purpose. I say they're using it against you because they want you to do something that benefits them, which is buy, part with your money. And that's why like behavioral science and the psychology of money is so important, because you can just use it back and you can say, hey, hold on. Like, I'm not going to fall into your mind games this Black Friday when you tell me that this thing is 60% off, but you already raised the price by 30%. Right. To tell me it was 50%. Like, and so it's really like interrogating, why am I buying? Am I buying to make myself feel better? Am I buying because I don't like the way I look? Am I buying because I need to fit in with other people this season? And, you know, one thing I say that's like the most radical thing you can do for your finances is to like yourself. Because you're going to stop trying to fix yourself, which we've been doing forever, right? Like, I think I grew up wanting to buy SlimFast and I was like 10. It's ridiculous, right? Like,
because it's what was, again, fed being the very unsavory word in the context. But it's what we were drummed into us.
It was on TV every single day. And then so was Kate Moss and so was Naomi Campbell. And then in 2009, Kate Moss says, well, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. And I'm like, well, now I need to be even skinnier. And like, we're always trying to change ourselves, men or women, right? I saw a really funny thing yesterday where it was like a comedian being like, my theory is like the best looking, like the hottest, the buffest guy in the gym is like the most miserable, because they're all trying to keep up with looking as good as everybody else, right? They've got the Calvin Klein models and we have the supermodels. And the same with business. You see the girl who travels all year round and lives on a beach in Bali, and you don't know that whatever big hotel chain is paying her to look hot on a beach and send pictures that she's also edited of her body to make you want that life. She's selling you the dream.
And at what cost?
How does a 22-year-old have 10k to spend on this thing? And it's like, she doesn't. It's free.
And I think that is a big message, and it's so important to kind of just dig a little bit deeper on, because of social media and how warped it can be. And just if you are looking very straightforward, you will and you want to believe in a certain thing, as opposed to stopping, taking stock of what exactly is being said, thinking about it and being open-minded. And again, back to your point, understanding your value, and just then kind of re-looking at something. And I think I would be pretty confident in saying when you do that, you'll relook at something with a different pair of eyes and you'll understand a little bit more of, I don't need that. Or that's actually not going to make me feel like that. So, I think it's a super important message. I love what you're doing. And it's so obvious that money and well-being go hand in hand now that I've spoken to you. But before that, it's like, is it? But of course it is. Everything that you do, those two things cannot survive without each other, through many, many different ways, you know, that we've only kind of touched very lightly on today. Whether you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're necessarily happy, but on the outset, that's how the world wants you to see. If you've got lots of money equals happiness, if you haven't got money equals sadness, that's not the case, in fact, because in the middle of that, when you cut that piece, is what you've said again, is the value piece. And not more often than not, the people that have a lot of money doesn't always equal happiness, because they're buying the things. So I think, you know, this topic could be spoken about again and again and again and again, because we go through different, like, the curve change throughout our life as well, where you look at money differently and you value money differently depending on where you are in life. So I think there's, lots of important messages. And I'm definitely going to listen to this back again, because there was so much you said at the beginning. I was like, yes. And I think it's so important, so interesting what you're doing. And it just feels like money is always used as this kind of, the way it is now and in the way the world it is that we live in, it's kind of used as a social status, and I hate that. But the way you've maintained that you're looking at it, and the way you're nurturing the whole kind of context of money and well-being and financial well-being, I think that's where we need to all stop and kind of really understand exactly how we approach life and financials. I could talk to you for a very, very, very long time on this, because we don't get taught enough of this when we're at school. And I think it would be great to, you know, have this instilled in children, in teens, you know, throughout our whole life, because just at a younger age doesn't mean you're unequipped. Again, culturally, you might have had something that has equipped you better to understand financial well-being. Mm. But I think the fact that you're taking the time and you're using your platform and your experience, and you're upgrading yourself to know more and more and more about it, you know, is amazing, because I think it's definitely something that, yeah, throughout our life we approach this topic of financial well-being in many different ways. So I think it's an amazing space to be in. So before we close, one question for me would be, what's next for you, and how you see this part of your business going? What is your intention for, you know, yeah, what's next?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like it needs to become my tagline, but then my business is called Finance Therapy, so maybe this is like a little sub offering maybe one day. But like, my goal is to have as many people get comfortable talking with about money as possible. Like, I do support professionals and founders, and be that through employee well-being programs. So, you know, I'll come into corporates and or businesses or charities or whatever it is, and do workshops with the employees. But I also do consulting in terms of how to, I do have a corporate background in startups and social impact and impact measurement. So I do a lot more of that strategic work in terms of how do you build more financially inclusive cultures? How do you improve your well-being offering for employees? How do you better look after your customers, be that vulnerable customers or just your customers in general? So that kind of covers a big kind of range of different things, depending on the business and what they're looking for in terms of how do we really look at both money, mental health, financial well-being, building more financially resilient communities on the ground. So anybody working in that space. And then I also do coaching. So for founders and professionals, I have a few packages depending on what you are. If you want like I'm like your financial hype girl, if that hasn't already come across. but you know, like for me, it's like money is a resource, and we still don't view it as such in society. We still look at money as some sort of goal, and your goals are very separate. Your goals are to have a business. Your goals are to get further education, to get married, to have children, to travel the world, like whatever your goal is, right? Like to support your family when they are elderly. That's a goal. And they are financial goals in the sense that you need money to be able to do all those things. Yeah. And so for me, everything I do is like, how do I help people make money their bitch? Because it is a resource. Like money is not for you to say, you know, I meet people who are like, I always wanted to like save 100K, and then I saved it, and then I was like, then what? Like, still wasn't happy. It's because, well, why was your goal the 100K? What did you want to do with 100K? Yeah. What were you hoping 100K would do for you? And so, you know, it's that piece of, yeah, like just really trying to help people understand that relationship between money and mental health, that the getting the ability to pull themselves out of potentially very dark places, but also helping people build that business that they want to build and not let their relationship with money hold them back. Like really start unpacking and unlearning the things that don't serve you anymore, letting them go, and then moving into a new way of being. And so whether that's through consulting that I do that then helps a wide range of people and communities, or whether it's one-to-one coaching, or whether it's workshops and retreats and speaking and podcasts. So
yeah, no, perfect. I think it's an amazing topic that can only evolve. And the fact that you can reach to so many people at so many different ages, this is something that we all deal with in our own capacity. And the fact that if we can raise awareness for people to talk about money and the position they're in, whatever that looks like, I think it's only a positive, because it is unfortunately such a big taboo. And we suppress the positions we're in financially, which has an effect on our well-being ultimately. Yeah. So I think it's a really good topic to be able to kind of spread awareness and understand what you're able to do and what services you can provide. So from a corporate to a one-on-one, so these meaningful educational pieces that you're able to put out there and make sure people are better equipped to know what to do. But I love the piece about culture, value and goals. Yeah. The goal bit is so important, because like you say, I want to get to a financial status, but what are you going to do once you have that? And that is literally a $1 million question. Probably a question that a lot of people cannot answer. I just wanted to have it.
I mean, yeah, people say they want financial freedom. And I'm like, well, what does that mean to you?
Yeah,
do whatever I want when I want. And I'm like, okay, so what do you want to do? And then crickets.
Yeah. It's,
I've never thought that far.
Yeah. It all sounds great and it's all very surface level. And again, I think that's something, if we could probably go another hour and talk about, is how we're all so surface level driven, but actually you take away that layer and it's like, what really does that mean? And that's where, like you say, it's a vague area that people don't have them answers. They set themselves these bars, but without the goal to back it up. And I think that's where you can come in and really support and have people understand exactly how to get to those goals, which is brilliant.
And then I didn't even mention it there. I'm so awful at plugging myself. But I run a finance therapy circle once a month, virtually online. People join from all over the world. And so if people are listening to this and they're like, oh, well, I'd like to hear more of me, but I connect mind, body and money in that space, and we do somatic practice for nervous system regulation to help people feel regulated when they're going to have conversations about money. And that is one of the biggest things I do in terms of
a massive topic, because I speak about this so much with my clients as well. The one big topic that people just do not want to touch is going in to negotiation, or even asking what the salary is for a job, and they'll have done 4 interviews and it's like, do you know what the salary is? No. So I love that, again, you've mentioned that there's so many cool things. So where can we find you? What's your Instagram handle? Do you have a website? Where can we find all of these amazing things that you do?
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm Money with Jas, because I can't get finance therapy for some reason.
And I'll link all these too. So Money with Jas.
Yeah, so Money with Jas on Instagram. I'm Jas Kiran Manga on LinkedIn, where I post Monday to Friday at least. I'm Finance Therapy on Substack, where I write every 2 weeks on a money and mental health topic. And it's kind of thought leadership. And so we take a topic and then I take a topic and then I think about all the different implications of money, and then there's tips in there and very actionable things as well. And then also on like our personal well-being. And then, yeah, like I said, the finance therapy circle. So the next one's on the 18th of December. And then I run those once a month, the second to last week of the month. And I rotate the days so that you'd always be able to join one eventually in case you have other commitments. And we'll link that as well. And that's like a really great community where people join from all over to share, listen and reflect in community with others and really explore their relationship with money. And we bring in like somatic practice, like I mentioned. So those are those things. So yeah, Substack, Instagram, LinkedIn, and my finance therapy circle, all the good places. And then if you actually want to work with me, just reach out.
Exactly. So I'll link everything. So anybody listening to this, you want more details, I know I do, because this is just so fruitful. There's so much to unpack, like literally I've loved it. It's been very, very there's so much of it. The well-being part is like so many nice relative things. Mm-hmm. And it all makes such sense from your upbringing to your social circles to things you've experienced throughout your life. It's super relative. I love what you're doing, keep doing it. I will link everything, so anybody listening, such an amazing topic that we can all relate to and all learn more about. And thank God you're doing this and making sure you're raising awareness and giving people the tools to you know, invest in themselves in the right way. So thank you so much. I've enjoyed speaking to you, and good luck with everything.